Okay, let's take our Bibles out. We have a lot of territory to cover today in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, which is an electrifying chapter, by the way. I had to miss the meetings yesterday, so you're going to have to cooperate with me just to update you a little bit about 1 Corinthians 5 and 6. Because I don't think we can understand 1 Corinthians 7 correctly unless we understand some principles brought out by the Apostle Paul in chapter 5 and chapter 6. So, tell me first of all about this. Mr. James, I believe yesterday took 1 Corinthians 6, correct? Can you help me a little bit then with what are some of these things that members in the church were taking each other to court over? Did you talk about that in 6:1? See, it says there, dare any of you having a matter against another? What kind of matter? Beg your pardon? Matters pertaining to this life, that's a good answer. I'd like to be a little bit more specific if we can, because I think there's some clues in the Scripture that will help us understand chapter 7. Yes, ma'am. Okay. Oh, how did you know that? That's very interesting. That's exactly right. There's an indication here that part of what is involved in chapter 6, taking each other to court, involved matters about marriage. Now, knowing how society is, do you think it would have been like airing dirty laundry before society to take marriage problems before civil magistrates? Do you think? I mean, look at our society today. I mean, look at all the things that get taken before court. I mean, what was that Bobbitt situation? I mean, you know, anything goes before court, right? And that was, if you permit me, that was pretty nasty, if you know what I'm saying. Now, the Apostle Paul is going to be talking about that because he thinks that certain items are not intended for public. That items are intended for where? Where? Well, home, yes. Home for sure. And then if it doesn't work at home, where? Within the church. So why don't we abide by that today? Why don't we abide by that today? To understand this just real quickly, how did the Apostle Paul learn about the questions that he's going to answer in chapter 7? This is important too. By the family of Chloe? Okay, because probably from that family, Mr. Armstrong probably talked about that it was learned through them, okay? And basically this book, the book of Corinthians, 1 Corinthians, is divided into two sections, leading up to chapter 7, and then beginning in chapter 7, where he takes a dramatic shift into detailed information about what subject? Huh? All the ladies are saying sex, and all the men are saying marriage. I don't know what that means, but... Okay, we've got the idea anyway so far. Okay, now come with me. I want you to notice something else too as we get ready to leap into this study. Notice in verse 9, it appears that the Apostle Paul, not appears, he did do this. He says that he had done what? He had already written them an epistle, didn't he? And in that epistle, he told them to do what? Not to keep company with whom? With immoral people. Doesn't it say fornicators? Isn't that what it is? Okay, not to keep company with fornicators, yet not altogether with the fornicators of this world. And it goes on to listen to all these people. For now I have written unto you. He goes on then and he explains, for now I have written. In other words, he begins to correct certain ideas. And I think there's a case to be made in 1 Corinthians 7 when we get into it that he's going to correct there some mistaken concepts about who needs to be married to whom because they misunderstood his first letter. That's certainly in there. Now, before getting into it, let's not forget the opportunity, as was brought out so aptly, that yes, there is a case to be made that certain things were being taken before the court that were just airing dirty laundry, and they shouldn't have been. The Apostle Paul is very disturbed about that. He's trying to set it right. Now, come with me to a little bit later on here in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, what does he mean in verse 12? All things are lawful unto me, but all things are not expedient. What does he mean by that? I know what the principle is. What's the principle that we extrapolate from that? All things are lawful, but not all things are expedient. What's that mean? Just the principle. Forget what it actually refers to. What's the principle from it? Okay, for example, just using an illustration, if you believe that alcohol is a sin, I believe it is, it's lawful for me to drink, but I'm probably not going to do it around you. Why? Because I don't want to cause offense, as the Bible talks about. Let's not cause offense. That also applies to things like, Christmas and so forth and so on. Of course, I don't keep Christmas, but the way in which we live our lives, we've got to be very careful about causing offense. All right, but there's something more specific here. Now, he says here, back up just a moment. It's important to understand this. Don't you know in verse 9 that the unrighteous shall not inherit the kingdom of God? And then he lists all these people. Fornicators, idolaters, adulterers, effeminate, and abusers of themselves with mankind. Then goes on to list the thieves and the covetous. Then following verse 12, I'm just going to take that up for a moment. He begins to talk about this thing. What, don't you know that he which is joined to a harlot is one body? There is a case to be made in verse 12 that he's referring to something quite specific. That all things are lawful, but not all things are expedient. And what might that be? What you do with your body. What you do with your body. And he's bringing out a case here in Corinthians that they weren't using their bodies correctly, because what were they doing? By they, I mean who? Most likely men or women, who would it be? Well, now say that again. Boy, I tell you, this crowd's tough. Well, that's exactly right, though. That's exactly right, because when you understand the cultural environment that these folks lived in, women basically were subjugated. We talked about that a lot. So the ones who were taking advantage of the privilege, no, let's not use the word privilege, that who were abusing their bodies were basically men, and they were going and joining in harlots, correct? You permit me that? And what's the Apostle Paul going to say about that? Yeah, Mr. Sam? Oh, yeah. That is exactly correct. Yeah, you have different types of people involved. That's certainly one group of people that we're all tied up in. Just anything goes. That'd be our language today. Okay. Now, all this having been said, I want you to help me understand something. Let's begin at verse 1 now. We're going to hit the high points of this. Now concerning the things whereof you wrote to me. What's that all about? You wrote to me. So it wasn't just Chloe and the family, but they received a letter. He received a letter from the church. And in this letter, there were several questions. So he says, is it good for a man, it is good, it says, for a man not to touch a woman? What's he referring to? Yes. Okay, I'll grant you that. But try to give the context now. Remember what we just read in chapter 6, the ending part. And where are men going? They're going to prostitutes, and he says, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. In other words, is that a reference to that? Did we say that? A man ought not to be going to prostitutes, folks. Do you all agree with that? I hope we're all in agreement on that one. Okay. Otherwise, we're going to have to spend the rest of the day on the seventh commandment here. All right. Okay. And it is good then for a man not to touch a woman. And yes, your explanation is exactly right. It could be single, but in the sense that he's going to be meaning this, anything that would be immoral. All right. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. I think that makes sense. That doesn't need a lot of explanation, does it? However, I do want to give you something to think about. There is some language that we get into But let's just read it. And I've always been puzzled by this, because why is the Apostle Paul throwing this in here? It doesn't seem to fit. However, some of the language he uses is interesting. Words like defraud. Defraud is what kind of a word? It's a legal term, isn't it? There seems to be a throwback to 1 Corinthians chapter 7 to 6 a little bit in here, doesn't it? Let's read this. Let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence. Why would that have to be put in Scripture? I mean, come on, now think about it with me. Okay, the husbands were running around. My question is, why were they running around? I'll grant you that. Why were they running around? It was definitely a sign of the troubled times, but I'm going to throw you a little bit of curve, something you might not expect in here. There is some degree of asceticism in here, in that because of the previous letters that had been written by the Apostle Paul, that there might have been, I'm putting this in quotes, because it's not going to change our outcome, but that there were some in there, some women who were not rendering due benevolence to their husbands. Why? Because they thought it was a sin. Or they wanted to devote themselves to the Lord. Now, just play that on there for just a moment. Here you are, and we'll talk about the couples in here, husbands and wives, and all of a sudden your wife gets converted and she doesn't want to have sex anymore. What do you think about that? Guess where the husband might go? Huh? He'd go where he'd be? He'd go tilt. Okay, boom. Okay, that's exactly right. What we're talking about here is something sort of philosophical gets in the way. So the Apostle Paul is writing this letter to straighten this all out. And the bottom line of this whole chapter is, let me give it to you in one basic idea, actually a couple. One is, if you're married, stay married. Okay? And if you're single, he's going to say, stay single. And why? Because of what? Because of the present distress. And we can talk about that just for a moment. In other words, he is trying to bring stability to a union that had been absolutely torn apart, much like it is today. And people were making excuses. See? And so he's going to try to instruct everybody, and the instruction is so valid for us today too. So let's read on just a little bit longer. So let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence, and likewise also the wife unto the husband. And those are just principles of good physical union. And I hope we all realize those things and think about them and try to apply them in our lives. The wives, it says, has not power of her own body, but the husband. What's that mean? What is this verse 4 all about? The wife has not power of her own body, but the husband. And likewise also, the husband has not power of his own body, but the wife. They belong to each other. I like that. Don't you like that? They belong to each other. Anybody want to add to that? Well, I've got a headache routine. Doesn't really get it. Unless you really do have a headache. Correct? Mr. Ham? Well, and that's certainly true. And I would also add, in the context of what we're reading, don't do it because you have inappropriate religious understanding. Don't do it for that reason either. See? Now the Apostle Paul is going to go on, and he's going to use a legal term in verse 5 about defraud. That's a legal term. It's a throwback to chapter 6 again in verse 7, where the word defraud, and that's also used again in verse 8. So see, the Apostle Paul he's writing this letter. There's a sense of continuity here. And he's going to actually tell us, listen, let's quit airing our laundry out in front of the public and society, and let's take care of it ourselves, and let's come to understand a few simple principles here. Let's quit. Men, women, render due benevolence to your husbands, vice versa. You better do that because you don't want to drive your husbands to the temple, the fornication and the prostitute, just that and the other thing, okay? Now, he says, defraud you not one the other, except to be with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer. come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency. Do we all understand what that means? There's just some times, really, where husbands and wives, guess what you've got to do? You've got to talk to each other. And that really, that's probably one of the hardest things at all for men and women to do. Having sex is easy. You know, being in love is not. And the way you're in love is you communicate and you talk and you share. And, you know, sometimes if something's going on in your life and you really just need time to yourself and privacy and prayer and fasting, tell your wife what to do or let her tell you. You know, and recognize it as a legitimate need, just as much as sex is a legitimate need. You understand what I'm saying? And you don't say, no, you can't fast and pray today because I... No, you don't do that. What do you do? Your body belongs to her and her body belongs to you, so guess how you're supposed to treat it? Now, if she wants to go on a 40-day fast, that might be different. Or vice versa. I better get off that subject right now. Okay, I think we see what we have in verse 5. The point is, hey, let's be responsible toward each other. Now let's come down to verse 6, which is an interesting expression by the Apostle Paul. He says, but I speak this. What does this refer to? What's the this refer to? Right. Because he says that by permission and not of commandment. What does he mean by that? Hey, he's been around. Do you think the Apostle Paul was married? Did Mr. Armstrong talk about that? I'm not talking about married at this point because he says that he goes on to talk that you should be here as I am, he says. But do you think that there's a case that he ever was possibly married? Ms. Ham? Yeah, he's talking about being he was sort of the front man for the Sanhedrin. However, the responsibility to be married doesn't rest so much in that responsibility as it does in the fact that he was a Pharisee of the Pharisees. And most likely, if you check these things historically, a Pharisee of the Pharisees using that language would have been somebody who was married. And there are documents that have been found that said the Apostle Paul was once married. Well, now that's an interesting question. Did his wife die? Because what is this chapter all about? Is about wives who have left you. It's about widows and so forth and so on. But that's a legitimate question. I don't know the answer to it. I'm just saying that's a question. If he was married and he's now single, one of two things has to have occurred. What are they? Huh? Okay. The word divorce is, divorce is implied in here, although I don't think the word divorce is mentioned. It's implied in here. Death is an option. Or there could be a separation, or he is single. You know that, okay? And maybe we can use the word divorce because I think the Apostle Paul would have done what is legally responsible. Yeah. Right. To the Gentiles? Mm-hmm. Right. Well, again, that's an interesting word, right to leave him. We could talk about all that, too. That maybe another time. Let me ask you this. How would you like to be married to the Apostle Paul? I'm not talking about you. If you want to be married to him. If you want to be married to him, we need to see you for a long counseling after church, I'll tell you. No, I know what you're saying. Yeah. And I don't want to be just caught up in that. It's just a question I'm raising because the language and the experience, he says, I speak this by my permission, not by the commandment. So where did he get all this knowledge and understanding? Inspiration. But do you think there's some element of personal experience here? You can't rule that out. You can't rule that out. All right, let's go on then and notice a category of people mentioned in verse 8. Perhaps we should read verse 7. But I would that all men were even as myself. And I think that the way to translate that is he's unmarried at that point. But every man has his proper gift of God, one after this manner and another after that. What is he referring to there? Okay, that's true, but more specifically in terms of the chapter, some are given to be married and some are given to be single. And I hope we all understand that. It's okay to be single. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. You know. you think he's going to make a case for being celibate. I think he'll make that case later on. But he's also not going to condemn people who are not, which I think is an interesting approach. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah. Okay, that is an excellent point you just made. I'd just like to expand upon that, if I may, for a moment. In the Old Testament, and I don't have time to explain this all to you today, it takes multiple studies to do this, there is evidence to support exactly what that lady just said. With this understanding, too, that in the Old Testament, men were expected to render, and I'll put it in the flight language, due benevolence to their wives. But wives were not expected, I mean, husbands were not expected to render due benevolence to their wives. Does that make sense? In other words, it was more up to the husband, not the woman. The only prohibition on the woman was is that she could not have sex with another man. And unfortunately, in the Old Testament, there was permission, quote unquote, given for men to have sex with polygamy and concubines. But the woman was not allowed that. And you are correct about the fact that, and you look at these things today, that the woman basically was not permitted divorce. Now, I'm going to expand on that just for a moment. That's a modern language word, divorce. She was allowed, the union was allowed to be broken for several reasons. And you can find this in Exodus chapter 21, I think about verse 10 if you want to read them. There are three things mentioned in that verse, and there's also something mentioned in the first chapter of chapter 22 in verse 1. And these four things give occasion for us to wonder about what it was that were grounds for a woman separating from her husband. And I'll tell you what those four things were. This is not even what the study is about. There was physical abuse. It's just not acceptable, and I hope you all know that today. Physical abuse is not acceptable. I mean, slapping each other around. There's no excuse for that in a married, converted family. It just isn't. There's not a one of you in this room who can make a case for that. I don't care if you're given to temper. Control your temper. Love your wife. And wife, quit throwing things at your husband. And I'm not saying that you do that, but don't do it, okay? I mean, I've known people who would do that sometime. I remember one time I was counseling with a family, and this woman was really distressed over why her husband was a little bit fearful and timid of her. And so I got to exploring it, you know, and the next thing you know, he would tell me how he would come home, and, you know, she'd be angry and mad at him, and she would throw china and stuff as soon as he would come through the door. So guess what he wanted to do? Get plastic plates. No, he did. Do you think he wanted to come home or not? Okay. Because, you know, every time you come home and you get a teacup in the old snoz, you don't want to come home, right? All right. So, no excuse for that. Okay, the other thing in there is physical abuse and a matter of the husband did not provide conjugal rights and the husband did not provide for her clothing and her necessities of life. If a man did not do that, she had a case against her husband. Okay. Don't extrapolate too much from that. Okay? Yes, ma'am. Read chapter 22 and verse 1 as it applies to the servant. If it applied to a servant, would it not much more so apply to a wife? 22. I think it's in 22 verse 1. I can check that with you later. Yes. That's a fair, yeah, that's pretty much true. Okay, I hate to rush along on this because I do want to hit the other high points of what this chapter talks about. But if any of you have questions, I'll be happy to talk to you about those things because the study of this is really, it's enlightening and it helps us understand where men have made mistakes over the years and we don't want to repeat those mistakes today. Okay, now we come to this group of people in verse 8. And what's this group of people that he is addressing? I say, therefore, to what group of people? Okay, let's just talk about unmarried for a moment. The unmarried, and what are the groups? And widows. Okay. Who might be considered unmarried? Give me the options on unmarried. Huh? Okay. Be somebody single. Is that okay? Somebody who's single is. Well, now that's interesting too, because later on, you know, remember he uses the language of virgin, and when we say the word virgin, all of us think of what? Of women. But yet, interesting, and I'll show you this later on, he talks about men in the language of virgin, and we all understand that, that men are virgins too. But we tend to just automatically think of women. But yes, it could be men or women, couldn't it? Okay? Who else could be unmarried? No. No, that's exactly right. I mean, is a divorced person single? Now, in this particular application, don't let me mislead you, because I think that what we're talking about here are, it's a letter from the Corinthian church to the Apostle Paul, correct? I mean, this letter that he's answering here. Okay? So it's from the church, and so he is most likely addressing answers to people who are either in the church or out of church. Okay. I think we must remember that. This is addressed to people who are in the church or converted and are trying their best to obey God. Because we can get into an argument, are in the church, out of the church. And I don't want to do that today. And I think most of it applies to us in the church anyway, doesn't it? Isn't that what concerns us? Okay. All right, he says, I say therefore to the unmarried and widows, it is good for them if they abide even I. And again, the question is raised there, I have it in my notes, was Paul a widower? That's a possibility. Okay, so, all I know is he's single. And probably not looking to get married. Now he goes on in verse 9, he says, but if they cannot contain, let them marry. For it is better to marry than to burn. What does he mean by that? Huh? Yeah, in other words, hey, if you really do want to get married, it's okay, because, you know, do you remember how it was when you were 19 and 20? Or maybe it's how you are now. I don't know. I didn't want to be too explicit there. But it seems to be that back early on that there's a... is the word burn, is it applicable? For it's better to bury than to burn. I think there's a double application of this too. I mean, what's the other application of it? Yeah, I mean, hey, you better obey God, because if you don't, it is pretty hot in hell. And that's putting it in modern day language. So again, he's just talking about the fact, listen, let's settle down, let's quit taking things to court. It's okay to be unmarried, and it's okay to be a widow. Okay? But now he addresses a new group of people in verse 10. And this is the group of what? The married. And answer for me, are they in the church or out of the church? Okay. Let's assume then, and I think it's appropriate to say that they are in the church and they are married. He says, I command. Oh, what's that mean now? I command, yet not I, but the Lord, let not the wife depart from her husband. Why might the wife want to be departing from her husband? Huh? Well, that's the reason. Who might be? Says that the husband might be at the temple in 1 Corinthians chapter 6. Says, yet I, but Lord, let not the wife depart from her husband. We don't necessarily know all the reasons here, but one thing we know, are you supposed to break up marriages? Are you supposed to keep your marriages going? You're supposed to try to keep them going. Okay, I agree with that. But, and if she depart, it says, let her remain unmarried. That's exactly right. She's not to leave him to go to another person. You know, there's something missing in this verse as I was reading it this morning, because people, we get into divorce and remarriage here. There's something missing in verse 11. That would have really made a difference for all of our understanding today. What if it said this? But if she depart, let her remain unmarried, or be reconciled, applies to her. What does it tell you about the state of the husband here? Okay. And let not the husband put her away. Does it remain? Does it say there then that the husband is to remain unmarried? You're not supposed to divorce her, not to put her away. But what I'm interested in here is the status of the husband. But and if she depart, let her remain unmarried. So if she depart, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband. This word reconcile is interesting because the word of reconciliation normally applies to what? It applies to guilt. You wouldn't know that, I don't think. But to be reconciled implies that there's guilt. Okay? And so where's the guilt here? On who? On the one who is left. See? But if she depart, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband. She's to be unmarried. She's not to marry somebody else. The whole purpose, and this is something that's hard for us to get through our heads today because of our litigious society, is the purpose of divorce. I'm going to make a general statement. As we see it brought out in the Old Testament and even expanded upon the New Testament, was what? What was the purpose of it? There might be several purposes, but one big purpose. You know what it is? Well, that was one of the reasons why they quit. It was to get back together. See? Yeah. Divorce was a discipline for reconciliation. Does that confuse you? Okay. If I divorce, have I remarried? I haven't remarried yet, have I? And so I'm not committing adultery, am I? I'm just single. I mean, I'm not living with my wife, and I'm divorced. I have a legal contract. Yeah, well, I'm not, but I would be in this case. Okay, well, I'm divorced. I'm over here, and there's no hanky-panky going on. I'm just divorced or whatever it is. I have a legal document. What can I still do? What's the purpose of divorce? This is a general statement. And see, we get all involved with society because the minute you hear divorce, what's normally at risk here? You've got another... There's another woman. What do you mean?
Well, one purpose of the
It is unusual, but what I'm saying is if you understand the scripture and look at it from the book of Genesis, which is a great place to begin, and I actually carry it all the way through the letters of the Apostle Paul, one of the things about the Bible teaching on divorce is it was for purposes of reconciliation. Okay. A time out. Now, honestly, people got divorced and it didn't work out that way. But it can be, and today when people get upset with one another, I don't encourage go get a divorce. I would never do that. But you know, sometimes if people, if it's really in trouble, I'll say it might be advisable to separate from one another for a while. To separate. Be faithful to each other, but separate from one another for what reason? To think it over, but what's my goal? Because I want you to get back together. Okay. Yeah. I don't want it. No good. So don't you point at me on that one. I don't want anything to do with that. No, I understand what you're saying today. And we realize we are a victim of our society just as much as they were back then. But the point I'm trying to make is the Apostle Paul's admonition here is, hey, let's not all just toss them up like a bunch of cards and all go out for free for all and get married. Stay married. Be married. If you're in trouble, solve your problems and get back together. See, that's the direction of Scripture. They should seek counseling in the church and not go to court. I think that's in there. Yes, sir. Yeah. Well, it's extremely painful. It is agonizing. Just to throw in a thought here for you, remember Deuteronomy chapter 24 and verse 1 about this man who put away his wife? And all of that. It implies in there that he might marry, that she can come back to him so long as she does not marry another man. Once she marries another man, she can't come back to him. Now, why is that? Well, yeah, there's a prohibition against taking things lightly, but there were matters of inheritance and, your legal progeny, who would be passed on. It would get all confusing, so forth and so on. And there was a prohibition, really, there's a prohibition in Deuteronomy 24, verses 1 through about verse 4 there, where it talks about the fact that if I divorce my wife, his best-looking gal on the Sabbath day, if I divorce Betsy, okay, and Betsy go out, okay, and she's out there roaming around. I don't like this conversation. She's out there. If she marries someone else, okay, I cannot bring her back. But if she's out there and I sort of come to my senses and she doesn't marry somebody else, guess what happens? That's what Deuteronomy chapter 24 is about, and that's just a little bit of a nutshell. So my direction to you here is to realize the purposes of the laws that we're talking about with the Apostle Paul, where he says, this is me talking, and yet he took the freedom to expand upon the teachings of Jesus. It was to do what with marriage? To divide it, to divorce it, or to do what with it? Reconcile it, get together, work things out. Listen, if your wife doesn't want to have sex and there's this, you're not communicating with each other, hey, don't go and get another partner. Work it out. See? Don't come up with all these flimsy excuses. Okay, let's hurry along quite quickly here. Goodness. Then it talks about this other group of people in the rest in verse 12. But the rest speak I not. Now, who are the rest here? These would be people that are involved in what kind of a marriage? Well, no, not necessarily. What kind of marriage would it be? Well, no, it says, if any brother has a wife that believes not, so this qualifies it. This is a marriage where somebody's in the church, somebody isn't out of the church. Somebody has truth, somebody doesn't have truth. And one of the reasons why this is in here, it may be a reaction to what he said over here about not keeping company with unbelievers. See, and the Apostle Paul is having to answer that question. No, I'm not saying divorce. Whoa! No, don't divorce. See? Because he says, if you are involved with an unbeliever, you're married to one, a brother, if a brother has a wife that believes not, and she be pleased to dwell with him, you can't put her away. And the wife which has a husband that believes not, and if he be pleased to dwell with her, let her not leave him. Okay. I think those are such rich words. Oh, I love that. I wish everybody abided by those things. All right. And the woman that has a husband that believes not, and if, in verse 13, if he be pleased to dwell with her, let her not leave him. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife. What does that little verse mean? The unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife. I think it's important to understand that. There's a sense of legitimacy in the sense of what? Yeah. Protection. Okay. Can I put it this way? Can I say it? Because the believer is in the church, the unbeliever has access to God and is not cut off. May I put it in that language? Okay, I think that's safe to put it that way. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband, else were her children unclean. And I think there is a special blessing that comes with one mate, certainly with two mates being in the church, but even with just one. And all of you who are single parents, in the church with an unconverted mate, just realize what a blessing it is. To be able to teach your children the truth as you're able to. Now, it says, but if the unbelieving brother depart, let him depart. A brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases, but God has called us to peace. In a nutshell, what does that mean? Okay. Okay, and he leaves, and that's exactly right. He leaves, so the brother, the one that's still in the church then, is he still married? And the idea here is it is a legal sundering. It is over. The unbeliever has gone and has left, and this verse, if you want to put a question mark in there, is question divorce. Because this is what the Apostle Paul is referring to, and more importantly, what about remarrying? Because they're no longer in bondage, and you can go back and check the Greek on this, and you get into words like slavery. doulos, you know, in subjection to. That's broken. Now, who broke it? The one who left. The unbeliever, not the believer. And please, believers in God's church, let's not break up our marriages. Come on. Let's get serious about the teaching of the Scripture. You know, we all have problems, but when you do, make your marriage work. Don't continue fooling yourself. Don't go to a prostitute. How are you going to save your marriage going to a prostitute? Somebody explain that to me. I don't want the answer. I don't want that answer on that one. This man was going to give it to me. Okay, quickly then. No, that's all right. Okay, now quickly, we don't even have to read through verses 16 through 22. I just want you to know something there. Basically, those two verses there talk about the fact, listen, how you're called, be content. If you're called circumcised, don't worry about being uncircumcised. If you're, you know, just be content. Are you being called a servant? Care not for it, but if you may be free, use it rather. Now, what is he saying here? Here you come into the church, and your husband's not in the church, you are. Are you supposed to be content with that or not? Yeah, quit trying to fiddle with it. It's okay to be the right kind of example, and hopefully your example will convert them, but don't separate from them. If you come into the church single because of the present distress that they were under, guess what? Be content. Now, quickly, let's begin to pick up in verse 24. Brethren, let every man wherein he is called therein abide with God. Now concerning virgins, and this is we were talking about this earlier here. Who are these virgins? We tend to think right off the bat of women, and I think that's the safest assumption, and yet you can't help but read just a little bit later on here about this applying to men here too. I have no commandment of the Lord, yet I give my judgment as one that has attained mercy of the Lord to be faithful. I suppose, therefore, that this is good for the present distress. I say that it is good for a man. See, he's just talking about virgins, and now he talks about who? Okay, for a man, so to be. Then we come up to the irrefutable discussion about the fact that abounding and losing. Aren't you bound unto a wife? Don't you seek to be loose. Why? Why? Huh? We just read about it up here, about all this present distress in verse 26, didn't we? Lord, let's settle down. Let's stay married. If you're loose, don't. Right now, because of the way things are, he's saying, listen, you want to be able to give attention to the Lord, so it might be just as well for you not to marry. Aren't you loose from a wife? Wife, seek not a wife. And what that, some people say, well, once your marriage is over, you should never marry again. That's not what that's saying. It's talking about the present distress. Because verse 28 says, but and if you marry, isn't that what it says right away? So you can't use verse 27 to say, once you have been divorced, that you should never remarry, because verse 28 says, but and if you marry, you have not sinned. And then it goes on to talk about, and if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. Nevertheless, such shall have trouble in the flesh, but I spare you not. And basically, the Apostle Paul then goes on to talk about taking care of these physical needs, but also being aware of the fact that once you get married, it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of your time. And he's raising the question whether or not, under the present distress, that you would want to do that. Notice verse 33. He says, but he that is married cares for the things that are of the world, how he may please his wife. What do you think about that? The reason I'm reading this verse is I don't think we do enough of that. I don't think we care enough for our wives. And I think if you have a wife, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to care for her. I mean, that's why if you're going to be married, you better be willing to give her the time to worry about her and to be concerned about her and to love her. Otherwise, don't marry. Because I don't know a woman yet who doesn't like to be cared for some way or another. Now we get into an extremely interesting dialogue beginning in verse 36. And I think that there is a break there from 36 through 40. And those of you who have studied, maybe you can just help us out real quickly. It says, but if any man think that he behaves himself uncomely toward his virgin, if she pass the flower of her age and needs so require, let him do what he will, he sins not. Let them marry. Anybody want to sort of speculate what this is all about? There are four schools of speculation on this. There's probably only two of the schools of thought that have some validity. Yes, ma'am. Okay. Yeah, this is against long engagements. That is one school of thought. I would like you to entertain this, and I do lean this way myself personally. I don't favor that one, though I realize that's a potential. I favor the idea of one of two things. Either the father who is concerned about his virgin daughter and having to give her away under present distress and all the worries, or someone who has charge of it, a guardian who has charge over a ward is what we would call it today. And I tend to favor that because it plays out. However, even though I favor that, that doesn't mean it's correct, because it doesn't change the outcome of what we're talking about here. There's just four interpretations of this. Some people even feel this applies to a leveret widow here. And do you know who that is? What a leverite marriage was? Now this one really causes me to think. I mean, I do a lot of spinning when I think about this. What it was is, it's an interesting thing. Maybe real quickly, we got just enough time to see that, I guess. And ponder this in your study. Leviticus chapter 25, I believe it is. Let's see. Leviticus 25. And this gives you a reason. Let's see. This is the one I want. See if I can find it here. No, it's not Leviticus 25. I'm going to find that for you, though. Is it Exodus 25? 25 is in my brain for some reason. See if it's over there. Nope, not there either. Somebody find it, let me know. But let me tell you what it was. It was a situation where a woman is married to a husband. Okay? They're in the family. The husband dies. She has no children. What's supposed to happen? Huh? The brother is supposed to do what? Oh, it's Deuteronomy 25. It's Deuteronomy 25. I had the 25 right. I didn't have it right. Deuteronomy 25. You read that. I don't have enough time since we're up against the clock. But you know the question that I'm concerned about in that chapter 25 is, which my mind goes spinning with? What if the brother's married? I know, but you see the concept we wrestle with? Here's a brother who's married, who's supposed to do what with his deceased wife, a deceased brother's wife? Yeah. I got to tell you though, E.B., I know that's right, but I can't. My wires blow out on that one. I mean, can you imagine Betsy? Let's see, how would I apply this? You know, let's see. Let's say Betsy. Let's see. No, that wouldn't be right. Let's see. I die. No, I don't have her brother. Oh, yeah, no. What would have to happen is, okay, how about this? Try this on. Betsy's husband dies without children. And guess who's around? And of course, I'm going to be the brother here. But so what I'm supposed to do is, even though I'm married to Betsy, she says, well, sure, sweetie, just go ahead. I mean, I wrestle with this one. You know, but the point is, without overstating it, it was a matter that had to be done. The interesting thing to me about this study, and you can read it in Deuteronomy 25, is once the child was born, whose child was it? It was considered to be the son of the deceased husband. Why? Because of what? Exactly. Okay. So, but you see any moral dilemmas in that example, which was by the law in Deuteronomy 25? I see some real moral dilemmas in that. The word in the Old Testament was polygamy or that type of thing. No, he didn't. Yeah. Now, come with me real. I'll close out here in 1 Corinthians 7. I'm sorry we had to rush along just a little bit. But it's, boy, it's a fascinating chapter. So many little things we had to look over. But please study it sometime. Just notice how it closes out. It says, and I really do believe these are the heart and core verses about marriage. In verse 39, the wife is bound by the law as long as her husband lives. But if her husband be dead, she is at liberty to be married to whom she will, but only in the Lord. And boy, there's a verse that is for, you know, we really need to think about that. I'll just say something. I'd really urge all of you who are single or divorced and are free to marry, that type of thing, to really think long and hard about marrying outside of the Lord. It's difficult when you marry inside the Lord. Agreed? It seems to be really difficult when you marry outside the Lord because you don't have the religion in common. It's an extra chance for a problem. It says, but she is happier if she so abide after my judgment. Again, I like what the Apostle Paul says, after my judgment. And by the way, you know, the church does make judgments today. And I can't help but say, please remember, when the church is involved in situations, trust our judgment. I don't mean that we're right 100% of the time, but sometimes we don't have anything to go on except what? Well, our judgment, you know, and it's never done without a lot of counsel. But he says, after my judgment, and I think also that I have the Spirit of God, the Apostle Paul says. And, you know, so we've got to give each other a little bit of leeway. One of the most judgmental things in the church is people point at each other, well, he's divorced, and she's divorced, and did she do this? We need to quit that kind of stuff. Most of us don't have an inkling of an idea what goes on behind closed doors. And let's be careful about judging people. And so my bottom line on this is, the Apostle Paul's admonition, I don't care whether you're unmarried, if you're a widow, if you're single, be content. Don't get overly caught up with anything that's going to become a distraction to serving God. Is that fair? And one of the biggest distractions in life is a pull of the flesh. Don't let that fool you out of the kingdom. It's women toward men or men toward women. Right? And marriage is binding until death do us part. Boy, it's a lot of fun, though, while you're on the ride, to have a good, happy marriage. Okay. And one of the ways you work at that is not looking for ways to get out, but for confirmation to stay in. So love each other, okay? Be happily married.